Believe it or not, some folks out there haven't even started their Christmas shopping yet. And you know who you are. I am Rob West. With just 4 shopping days left, time is running short. But if you're just getting started with gift buying, you still have time to do it right. Today, Howard Dayton gives us advice for last-minute Christmas shopping. We're off, so please hold your phone calls. This is MoneyWise on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Well, our good friend Howard Dayton is the former host of this program and the author of several books on biblical finances. Howard, great to have you back with us.
Wonderful to be with you, Rob.
Howard, as you know, Ecclesiastes 3:3 tells us, to everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven. We usually don't think that's a warning about procrastinating, but perhaps it could be, couldn't it?
It sure could. And if folks have been procrastinating with their Christmas shopping, now's the time to get serious. So develop a shopping list that will help you avoid making last-minute mistakes.
Yeah, that's a great idea, and it's exactly what we want to do. So where do we start, Howard?
Well, start with a goal and a plan. The goal is staying out of debt this Christmas season.
Yes.
Your plan will help you do that by helping you think more carefully about spending and avoiding impulse purchases. Now, drawing up your plan is pretty simple. First, determine how much you can spend without going into debt. That's your shopping budget. Then make a list of everyone you need to buy a gift for. And finally, divide the money in your budget among those names. Now, they won't all be equal. You can set your own priorities. But in the end, don't spend more than you budgeted for Christmas shopping.
Yeah, that is simple, but it may not be easy, as you know, Howard. So what advice do you have if folks have trouble with their plan, like perhaps not having enough money?
Well, remember, the idea isn't keeping up with the Joneses during Christmas.
Yeah.
It's having a debt-free Christmas. That's also a wonderful time and memory for your close friends and families. So be a student of each person on your list. Buy or make inexpensive gifts that are meaningful to the recipient. And don't forget, there's still time to bake and decorate Christmas cookies. Make gifts of them to all or some of the people on your list.
Yeah.
It's another inexpensive way to show people that you care. So make a stack of them, wrap them up, and put a bow on them, and you're done. And keep the focus on Christ, who gave us the greatest gift ever, the gift of salvation. You can never top that. Where possible, your gift should also include a handmade card with some verses from the Christmas story in Luke 2. The world has taken Christ out of Christmas. Let's take this opportunity and put him back in it.
That's a great idea, Howard. Now, these handmade gifts may not cover everyone, so if you have to head to the stores, what advice do you have for us?
Well, for a lot of last-minute shoppers, the temptation is just to whip out the credit card and use it.
Yeah.
But actually, there's nothing wrong with using a credit card if you follow 3 simple rules, and the last 2 apply every month. First, use a credit card only for budgeted Christmas purchases. Second, pay the credit cards off on time and in full every month. That way, there's no interest charges, no late fees, and no debt. And finally, the very first month you can't pay a credit card bill in full, take out the scissors and perform some plastic surgery. Remember what Proverbs 22:7 tells us. The borrower is slave to the lender. The Lord wants us to be free, free to serve him and not our creditors.
Oh, that's so good and so practical. As we tie a bow on this, Howard, pun intended, what final advice do you have for us?
Well, in Matthew 25, Jesus said, "Whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did it for me." So try to save something for a very special gift to the poor this Christmas season, because when you do, you're giving to Christ himself.
Oh, I love that. Well, Howard, Merry Christmas to you, my friend. Thank you for stopping by today, and we always appreciate our time with you.
Love the time with you, Rob.
That was Howard Dayton, former host of this program. He's the author of Your Money Counts, and he stops by regularly on this program. Take his advice to heart. Don't try to keep up with the Joneses. Put that plastic away. Make gifts where you can, and keep Christ at the center of your Christmas. As I said, we're off today, so don't call in, but we've got some great calls lined up in advance, so we'll go to those just around the corner. I'm Rob West, and this is MoneyWise on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Thankful to have you along today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. Hey, let's turn the corner and take your calls on anything financially speaking, whether that's your spending plan and how to rein it in, live in light of this 40-year high inflation, or maybe it's your long-term investments and navigating the volatility on the stock market, or anything in between. We began today by talking about generosity. And this time of year, as we think about the ultimate gift given, Jesus, our Savior born, as we celebrate at Christmas time, it's an opportunity for us to think about our own generosity as we model the generosity of the Lord Himself and give to meet those in need, to support the work of ministries, literally to the ends of the earth, bringing the gospel to people in the name of Jesus Christ, and the people on our path that are really struggling at this season. You know, in my experience counseling clients over many years on financial decisions, making, I've found that no matter the income level, people struggle with fear, frustration, and guilt in their financial lives. And I also have experienced that those who are most free from these emotional byproducts of financial decision making are those who are most generous. Why? Well, I think it's because of what Randy Alcorn calls the treasure principle. Jesus told us in Matthew 6:21, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. You see, God wants our hearts, not our money. He wants to absorb the fact that the all-knowing, all-powerful, all-loving God owns every resource, including those entrusted to our care. And when you and I give, and when the people that we encounter give, we open our hands. We loosen our grip on the resources He's given us. We acknowledge His purposes are higher than our own, and His provision is more complete than our own. You see, when we give, we put our treasure in His kingdom and free our hearts from the constraints of our own mini kingdom. It really changes our perspective, and it orients our thinking to God's ownership, control, and purposes, and it really frees us from believing that we are ultimately responsible for our own well-being, and it reminds us of the bigger context of our world and our place within it, that the true economy is God's economy. So this is an opportunity at this time of year in particular to think about your generosity so that we can lean into that as an act of worship as we celebrate our newborn King. And I hope that's an encouragement to you today. All right, let's turn our attention to your phone calls. And we're going to begin in Marshallville, Ohio. Hi, Steve. Thanks for calling. How can I help?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, first of all. So sure. I'm just kind of curious here. I have kind of gotten to the point in my life where I've paid off most of my debts. And the only remaining thing is my mortgage left. And I've got a little bit of extra income here, and I'm just kind of debating on whether it would make sense to work on paying off my mortgage, invest that some more, or maybe even potentially look at like real estate or something like that to invest in.
Yeah, great. Well, once you've capped your lifestyle, there's no more reason to put additional resources into the live bucket, if you will. And the O bucket, once you've paid everything off, and you have, it sounds like, except your mortgage, that one can get eliminated because then the only thing that's left is, do I give more, or do I eliminate or eradicate my debt completely, including my home, or do I put more in the give bucket? The grow bucket, that which I'm saving for the long term. Let's start there, Steve. Just tell me how you're feeling with regard to your progress toward your ultimate finish line for retirement. Do you feel like you're on track with that?
Yeah, I do. I have a 401k through work. And I have two separate IRAs that we try to max those out every year. Actually, we try to max out all three of those. So I feel like I'm on the right track with as far as retirement goes.
Okay, very good. And how many years do you have left toward retirement?
Boy, probably about 30.
Okay, so you're a young guy, but diligently saving for the long term. Tell me about your mortgage. What's the house worth, and what do you owe on it today?
I'm at right around $200,000 left on it, and I have about a 3.2% mortgage rate.
Okay, what do you think the home's worth?
Probably about $400,000.
All right, and is this a 15-year or a 30-year mortgage?
It's a 30-year mortgage.
All right, and how many years into it are you?
Two.
Oh, only two. Okay, great. And so are you all sending anything extra beyond the minimum payment right now?
Yeah, we pay about double what's due okay. every month.
Great. And if you were to continue that, you believe you have even more surplus that you could put toward, let's say, a down payment on a rental property or additional investments?
I do, yes.
Okay. And last question, do you all have just a real conviction to be debt-free as soon as possible, or are you willing to kind of stick with this mortgage on the current trajectory where, let's say, it gets paid off in, you know, maybe 15 to 20 years instead of 30?
So I hate the feeling of having debt on top of me. It grinds me, but I would be willing, I guess, to ride with it if I could get a substantial more return with investing.
Okay. Yeah. Very good. Well, I think, you know, that's really the operative question, because these are both good ideas that you'd want to continue to build wealth, or you'd want to give more, or you'd want to pay off this mortgage in full. I think because this interest rate is so low, and because you have good cash flow, and because you've already prioritized accelerating the payoff by way of you all doubling that payment every month, and that's going to put you on a track to probably cut that in half in terms of the payback, I would say if you have additional surplus, I would probably be looking to, if you want to be a landlord and that's a desire of yours to have another asset class growing for the future through real estate, I would say that would be a great opportunity in addition to any, you know, further giving that you all want to do. If, though, you were to say to me, you know what, this really just does weigh on me. I want to be out of debt as soon as possible, and it really doesn't concern me how low the interest rate is or what I could do with it apart from that. I just want the peace of mind to know that I'm not encumbered and I've got total flexibility. And although some advisors would say, oh, that's nonsense, I would say, no, lean into that and accept that conviction that you have, and let's go full bore after this mortgage and get it paid off. But it sounds like perhaps you're not quite that far in that camp, and you'd be willing to live with it if you knew you were doing something productive with it. And I would say that's fine, because again, you're on a great track as a young guy. You're absolutely going to be out of debt well before retirement, unless something dramatically changes in your financial life. So there's no reason not to look for additional wealth building opportunities. And I like real estate as a second asset class, or additional giving. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense. Thanks for explaining all that. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Hey, I'd really target as close to you could get as 50% down on this property. Let's not take out a big mortgage, although we look to 20% as a target for a down payment on a primary residence when we're just getting started. I'd try to go into this with as much down as you can, and then look at it as a way to generate some income. Of course, you know, have the renter help you pay that off. And as long as you guys are committed to the time and effort that will go into being a landlord, I think that's a great opportunity for you. So thanks for checking in with us, Steve. Sounds like you all are doing a great job in managing God's money. Once again, this is a recorded program, so phone lines are not open today. Let me issue a special invitation to you. If you've benefited from the principles and practical advice that we share every day on this program, maybe you've connected with the MoneyWise coach, or you use the MoneyWise app, or you read our MoneyWise weekly wisdom email. Well, all of that is possible only because of your financial support. And I would just ask whether you would consider a gift. Just head to moneywise.org. You can give online, you can give over the phone, or you can give electronically there. Again, moneywise.org, and thanks in advance. Thankful to have you along today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. Today's program is recorded, so phone lines aren't open, but we have some great questions lined up for you. To Tampa, Florida we go. Danny, thanks for your call. How can I help you?
Thank you. My father is 90 years old, and he hasn't been doing too well with his health. He wants to, he has a house that he wants for the brothers and sisters to keep part of it. So basically what he wants to do is he wants to put me on the title and take out $220,000 from equity from the house. So the house is worth $420,000. He wants to take out $220,000. And out of the $220,000, he wants to give the two sisters and two brothers $33,000, each one of them. And the rest of the house, he wants to basically, me and my brother, two of us, split it later on. So my question is, I'm trying to see how can I go about it, making a contract with my brothers and sisters regarding this.
Interesting. Let me just make sure I understand the scenario. So you said the home is worth $420,000. Is it owned free and clear?
He owes $101,000.
He owes $101,000. And he alone is on the title to the home, correct?
Correct. Yeah, he wants to put me on it.
No, I understand that. I'm just trying to figure out what he's trying to accomplish. So he owes $101,000, and his goal is what, other than to, I guess, give a portion of his inheritance, i.e. the value of the property, to the kids now? Is that right?
Correct. He wants to do that because he feels that something is going to happen to him. And before he goes, he wants to leave everything settled with the four of us. Now, the two girls, they will only get $33,000. I will get $33,000, my brother $33,000, and then the remaining portion of the balance of the house, he wants for me and my brother to split it later on.
Yeah, but he's taking it out in the form of a mortgage, is that right?
Yes, a refinance, like a cash-out refinance.
Yeah. Why not just put this in a trust or just leave it to the kids on a pro rata basis the way you just described at his death?
Okay. So how does that work?
Yeah. So here's the thing. You know, first of all, if you try to take the equity out now through a mortgage, it's very expensive money. I mean, mortgage rates are up over 7% right now. So he'd be giving them a portion of this equity, but somebody's going to have to service that debt. That's going to be a huge monthly payment. Beyond that, it's going to create tax implications. If it's left to the kids as an inheritance, the cost basis for the home, which is what determines how much capital gains is paid when it's sold, the cost basis will increase to the date of death when it's passed to the heirs. So let's say you receive equal to 50% of the remaining portion. Let's say that was $100,000. Your cost basis on that $100,000 worth of equity in the house is reset to the date of death. So essentially you have no gain unless you were to hold it and it appreciates further. If you just add your brother and you to the title, then you're receiving it as a gift. The cost basis remains the same, what your dad originally bought it for. And so when you sell it, you're going to have capital gains on all of the gain going back to the original purchase price. So from an estate planning standpoint, it's actually better for him to pass it to his heirs in whatever percentages he wants, either through a will. So he would create a last will and testament with an estate planning attorney who would draft the will according to his wishes, and then the house would go through probate and pass to the heirs. Or he could set up what's called a trust, a living trust, where he would name a trustee, the house would be retitled in the name of the trust, and based on certain triggering events, either him being incapacitated prior to his death or at his death, the home would pass outside of probate directly to the beneficiaries of the trust in whatever percentages he establishes. But again, the cost basis would be raised to the value of the home as of the date of your dad's death, which means that there's no tax consequences when it's sold. Does that all make sense?
Yes, it makes sense. Yes, that's why I wanted to call you and see which way to go, because I would have to be paying the mortgage from here on, the $326,000.
Right. Yeah, you don't want to do that. That's going to be a pretty expensive mortgage. Only in the primary reason is just to be able to give this $33,000 apiece to the other kids. But I think they're just going to have to wait and receive that at his death. The next step would be for you to visit with a godly estate planning attorney with your dad to make sure either the will or the trust is put in place. They can advise you on which is better, and then make sure his wishes are carried out. At the same time, you could also get a durable power of attorney to cover whoever's going to make financial decisions for him if he's incapacitated. You can do health care directives and a health care power of attorney. You can make sure all of those documents are updated, but a primary objective will be to make sure that the will is, or the trust, or both are in place to handle the distribution of his assets at his death. That's going to be a far better way than trying to tap into the equity now and give it away, because now you've got to service the mortgage and you've got real tax implications on the sale.
Okay. All right. That answered my questions. Let me then see a Christian lawyer. Oh, help.
That's right. If you don't have an estate planning attorney there in Tampa, you could reach out to one of our certified Kingdom advisors and ask for a referral. Just go to our website, Danny, at moneywise.org. You could do a zip code search when you click find a CKA. Call any one of those certified Kingdom advisors and say, listen, I listen to MoneyWise and I need a godly estate planning attorney and I need a referral, and they'll give you a phone number.
All right. Thank you so much. I will do that.
Okay. Very good, Danny. Thanks for calling. God bless you, my friend. Well, what a delight to talk to Danny. His dad obviously is wanting to take care of the kids. The key is to do it in a way that makes sense and is not only tax efficient, but doesn't create a huge debt service issue in the meantime as he tries to handle these finances. Well, folks, a lot more MoneyWise ahead. The questions you have are what I'd like to hear. What's on your mind financially speaking today? We'll apply the counsel of God's word to your financial decisions and choices, help you move forward with confidence. Hey, as we head toward year end, let me remind you, MoneyWise is listener supported. We do what we do because of your generous support. And now more than ever, we could use that support at MoneyWise.org. Just click give. We're going to pause for a brief break, but we'll be back with more MoneyWise on American Family Radio. Stick around. Well, we're thrilled you've joined us this morning for MoneyWise on American Family Radio, biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. We're going to head back to the callers. Barrington, Illinois. Hi, Jeannie. How can I help you?
Yeah, my question was about the Illinois Secure Choice Retirement Program that our employees have reached out to us. And we have to make a decision by, I think, January 1st. Okay. I wondered if you're familiar with the program and what your thoughts were on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a Roth IRA, from what I understand, and although it's mandatory for employers that don't have another plan of their own, it's voluntary for workers, so you can opt out of it. It acts like a Roth IRA. It even has the same contribution limits as other IRAs, so your total can't exceed $6,500 in 2023 unless you're over age 50. Now, you can have another IRA alongside it. So you would be able to have both. And then you invest it in, you know, stocks, bonds, or mutual funds. So I like it if you don't have another option, because I want you to be able to put as much away for retirement as possible. And between the two, you could put away $13,000, if you were to invest in the secure, choice plus your own Roth IRA that you were to set up separate. I'd prefer that you have a retirement plan offered by your employer that's not the secure choice, because, you know, for instance, if they had a 401k or 403b, you'd be able to put away a lot more money. And usually, you know, $13,000 is not going to get you to be able to the place where you can put away 10 to 15% of your income. It may, and that's great if it does. But I think, you know, apart from another choice, I would certainly take advantage of it. And I like that it's treated like a Roth, because that's going to give you tax-free growth, even though you don't get the current year tax deduction. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And if I do have another, are you saying the max you can do if you have another is $13,000 a year?
Correct. Yeah, because the $6,500 would apply to each of them. Yeah.
Okay, and so in it, you're saying that the interest that it earns is when you decide within the Roth IRA to, you know, diversify it into different stocks or...
Yeah, so the Roth is the vehicle, or in this case, the secure choice plus the Roth. That's the tax-deferred vehicle or account that you would put the money into, and then inside it, you could choose, you know, any investment choice you want. And I would put it in just a good growth mutual fund that's consistent with your age and objectives, just to try to grow that inside the Roth IRA, which means it's going to grow tax-free. And then when you pull it out in retirement, you don't pay any tax on the return of the amount you put in, but you also don't pay tax at that point on any of the gains either.
Oh, okay. So once you reach retirement age, the Roth IRA can be converted. You're not paying tax on it when you take it out and use it.
Yeah. So typically what would happen is it would grow to some much larger amount because it's compounding over a long time. And then you would generally keep that invested, although you'd get more conservative. And then you just convert that to an income stream. So you might say, okay, this has grown to a couple hundred thousand dollars. I'm going to, you know, pull out 500 a month. And, you know, that comes out without any tax being paid as you take that and use it to supplement your income in retirement.
Okay, so I'm within the retirement requirement.
I'm losing you a little bit. You're breaking up there. I think I heard, so you would want to open a Roth IRA separately, if that's what you were asking, and you'd do that on your own. You could go to a Fidelity or a Schwab, open that, and then make a systematic contribution yourself. One would come through salary deferral. The other would come, as just a contribution that you would make directly, and then you'd get both of those invested, and they'd both grow for the future. Hope that helps you, Jeannie. I'm sorry I couldn't hear the final part of your question there, but we appreciate you calling today. To Lebanon, Indiana. Hi, Robin. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I was calling with a couple questions. I am in the process of putting my house on the market, and I do not owe anything, so there's no mortgage to pay off. I'm extremely grateful for that. And my husband is wanting to take that money, and I will pay. I have a few debts that I need to pay down in the amount of less than $10,000. And then just curious where I should invest that for the best opportunities and how capital gains is going to affect me, how much that will be.
Yeah, very good. So the home that you're selling is not your primary residence?
Correct. It used to be. It no longer is. So okay. I'm fortunate enough, I don't need to keep it. And I really don't think I want to be a landlord.
Okay.
Because it's over an hour away anyhow, so I just would rather just be done with it.
Did you live there 2 out of the last 5 years?
Yes, I was in there 6 years.
Okay. So if you lived there 2 out of the last 5 years, you wouldn't have any capital gains. Are you married filing jointly?
Yes.
Okay. So if you're married filing jointly, you live there 2 out of the last 5 years, then you could consider that your primary residence would meet the requirement for you all to have no capital gains on the first $500,000 of gains, not the selling price, but the gain on the property. Did you have more than $500,000?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No.
So you wouldn't have any capital gains at that point. You can check with your CPA to confirm that you meet the requirements. But again, 2 out of the last 5 years is really the general requirement there. So that shouldn't be an issue. Then the question is, okay, what do you want to do with that money? Are you looking to roll this into another home, or you already have another home?
No, we already have another home. He's looking for me to just put this money aside, put it in my name, and have it grow and be there for me. And I don't really have a good idea at this point with the way the market's gone in every direction, just what would be a good opportunity. If, say, from that I took $100,000 or $150,000 and said this is just strictly for investing after, tithing, what would I do?
Sure. Tell me more about why you'd want it in your name only. What is he trying to accomplish there?
Well, he's just a very good man. But by putting it in my name, he already oversees his mother's things and a lot of his sister's things because there had been a death in their family. So he already has a lot that he does, and I just think he's trying to keep that separate so that there's no issues or, it's just he wants it to be mine. It had previously been my home before we married, so he just wants to make sure that that's available to me.
Got it. Okay. So what I would probably do is, you know, if you're looking to put this to work and you've got at least a 10-year time horizon, I think this is a great time to begin moving this into the stock market. I mean, the bond market has sold off significantly as the interest rates have risen. The stock market is down still considerably, although we're well off our lows. Could we retest them? Yes, especially if we hit a recession, full-blown recession next year. But again, you wouldn't be looking out 1 or 2 years. And I would probably, unless you just really have a strong desire to manage this yourself, I'd find an advisor that could make these buying and selling decisions for you based on your goals and objectives. Would you be open to delegating this to an advisor who could build the portfolio and manage it for you?
Oh, absolutely. That would be more peace of mind, actually.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. So what I would do is head to our website at moneywise.org and click Find a CKA. That stands for Certified Kingdom Advisor. There's a lot of them in Indiana. I'd interview 2 or 3 that are investment advisors, find the one that's the best fit, and then you'd open an account at their custodian, probably Fidelity or Schwab or one of the big firms. And then based on your goals and objectives, they would take over management of that moving forward, and you'd obviously, you know, be able to see in full view everything that's happening, but you'd know that somebody's really giving ownership and direction to that going forward. Thanks for your call today, Robin. We'll be right back with more Money Wise on American Family Radio. Stick around. Thanks for joining us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. So glad you're along with us today. Here in our final segment, let's head right back to the phones, waiting patiently in Port St. Lucie, Florida, is Charles. Charles, go right ahead, sir.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
The reason I'm calling, my wife and I, we just recently purchased a new home. We had one built in Port St. Lucie. We sold our primary home that we was in. We lived in it for 30 years, was able to, you know, get a pretty good penny out of it, you know, close to about $350,000. We took most of the money and put down on the new home because I wanted to try to keep a lower monthly payment.
Yeah.
The house, the new home valued estimated was around about $495,000. So we put down close to about $295,000 on the home. And the question I wanted to ask, if I wanted to, not pay the taxes and the insurance, just hold that back and just put that money aside, not pay it in, you know, in with the mortgage, is that a good thing to do?
Yeah. That's a great question. Do me a favor and turn down your radio just a little bit. The mortgage servicer is giving you that option, Charles. They're saying you can go either way. Is that right?
That's correct. I can go either way.
Yeah, okay. So there's really no difference. I mean, the one advantage of going ahead and lumping it in is that it's just for savings. So you don't get to the end of the year and, you know, you get a big old tax bill or you get a big insurance, homeowner's insurance bill, and you haven't put the money aside, and now all of a sudden you're having to come out of pocket thousands of dollars and the money's not there. Whereas if you just kind of build it into your monthly payment, you know it's there sitting in escrow. Now, you could accomplish the same thing by setting up an automatic transfer to a savings account for the same amount. And if you do that with an online bank, and now that they're paying 2 or 3% interest, you could earn a little bit of interest, not a whole lot, but at least, you know, you'd have access to the money if you needed it. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, it doesn't matter as long as it gets paid. I think the key is just, would you rather know that you just send the one monthly payment and let the mortgage, you know, company handle it and you know the money's going to be there? Or would you rather control that yourself? And if so, are you disciplined enough or do you have enough in the way of reserves to make sure that the money's going to be there when that time comes? The only other benefit to doing it yourself is, you know, a lot of times these escrow departments will make mistakes. So they'll want you to have an extra cushion in there. So they'll all of a sudden tell you they want you to send more because, you know, they want to make sure they've got enough in there if the property taxes or insurance go up. Sometimes, you know, they'll miscalculate it and, you know, so they don't have enough there and then you're having to make it up. So anyway, I know I'm kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth a little bit, but I think it really comes down to, are you going to take this on and make sure that you've got the money there? And if so, great, then you can control that. Otherwise, I think it's just kind of easier to let the mortgage company handle it. But give me your thoughts.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, because I had that happen to me before with, you know, my primary home. You know, it always was a shortage. It always was. I had it at more. So I was thinking on what I could do because, you know, we had some money where I'm able to put at least 6 months of my finances away. And then I'm able to also, you know, put in the taxes and insurance into a savings. And, you know, I didn't think about putting it into a savings, but that's what I wanted to realize, you know, figure out what should I do. And then I have like, you know, maybe $30,000 or $40,000 that we wanted to invest. Because, you know, because in my 5 years, I'm hoping to retire.
So with the $40,000 that you want to invest, yeah, as long as you have a time horizon of at least 5 years, preferably 10, you could put that to work into the stock market. I mean, the market is down right now from its highs because of, you know, just what we've been experiencing this year with inflation and raising interest rates. So because of that, I think you could certainly get that to work. I'd love for you to do that in a tax-deferred environment. So do you all have a company-sponsored plan at work that you can take advantage of?
Yes, we do. I do with Fidelity.
Okay, and are you putting in what percent of your income?
I'm putting in like 6% of my income now.
Okay. So one option would be you could really bump that up and you could go up to 15%. And if that reduced your paycheck such that you didn't have enough to kind of cover the bills and all the things you're doing, you could pull a little bit out of savings each month to essentially trade the money in savings for the money going into the tax deferred retirement plan. Because if that's truly what you're saving for, yeah, you could take this $40,000 and, you know, put that in a taxable account. But as you get dividends and, you know, interest and distributions and ultimately appreciation with capital gains, you're going to have to pay taxes on it. Whereas if you were to just really bump up your contributions in your retirement plan and max out what you could put in there each year, even if that, you know, brought your check down lower than you would want it to be, again, you could use the savings to replace that income and essentially systematically move that savings from a taxable environment to the tax deferred environment. Does that make sense?
Oh, that definitely makes sense. So, okay. So also with the 6 month, you know, the 6 month savings that I wanted, so what, where should I put that in into if we ever need it?
Yeah, I would put it in an online bank with, you know, FDIC insurance. So I would look at Marcus at Marcus.com or Capital One 360 or Ally Bank, one of those three. You'll be paying right now about 2.5% or more a year with no fees. And you can link that to your checking account. And if you ever need it, it's not sitting there in the same account that you pay the bills out of, which is a good thing, but you can transfer it electronically for free, you know, within a couple of days. And that would be the way that I'd go so that you don't have any monthly fees and you're getting a little bit of interest.
Gotcha. Okay. That's what I wanted to know.
All right, Charles. God bless you, my friend. To Sheridan, Indiana. Hey, Judy, thanks for your patience. Go ahead.
I have a quick question, and I've learned a lot from you, so thank you.
Well, thanks.
I'm 65, bought a $10,000 life insurance policy 3 years ago, I believe, and I'm figuring out that I'm not going to get the thing, quote, paid off, not the right language, really,
sure,
until I probably already passed away. So I went and paid for my own cremation, my final arrangements. So now I'm thinking, why do I need this life insurance policy?
Yeah. Yeah. I would completely agree with that. So the only question is, you know, is there somebody depending upon you for your income such that if you were to pass away, it would create a hardship in their life? And I assume the answer to that is no. Is that right?
No, not really.
Okay.
I'm a grandma, so, but I have an IRA and a Roth. And with your advice, I have online money market, high yield savings, and a couple
Good.
Of CDs.
Okay.
And just all I have is a mortgage, and I'm socking 5% into my work IRA and going to put $250 a pay into the money market, high yield savings. And I thought,
yeah,
why am
so
I
it's,
paying?
I agree. Put that back in your budget, and you can use that for maybe buying some extra gifts for those grandbabies, or you know, giving it away, or saving you know, even more. Because it doesn't sound like there's a need for this policy. You have assets that you can pass on. Nobody's relying on you for your income, and you've already covered your funeral expenses by prepaying that. And if there was anything else, you've got assets that would be available, you know, for that purpose. So I would say let that policy go.
Yeah, I think I will. And I, once again, I just wanted to run it by you because I've learned a lot from you and I do appreciate your show. So thank you.
Well, I'm grateful, Judy. Thanks for calling. That was very kind. To Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Deborah, how can I help you?
Okay. Just to be quick, I got a call today from a verified agent from Discover. And what they offered was to take the current balance that I have on my Discover card and convert that to 0%, not only to 0% for the current balance, but for the future. And I don't have to do anything different. And I asked them, well, why are you doing this? Because they reached out to me. I didn't reach out to them because I'm trying to pay this card off. They said that it's because of my credit history and my payment history, and that there's some kind of review that has been going on about how much people are being charged for interest, and that the people are paying religiously on their credit cards, but their balances aren't going down. And he's going to call me back tomorrow because I was at work and I wasn't able to talk to him very long. But I said, I'd like to know if you've heard anything about this. Is there some kind of regulatory thing that's going on and they're asking credit card companies to do something about this gouging that they're doing with their percentages?
No, I'm not aware of anything, and that's their business model, so I don't see them changing that. Oh, you made a statement. You said the agent was verified. How so?
I have Discover card number in my phone, and it actually came through Discover card's number. It wasn't like a random number or anything like that.
Yeah, I don't think this is legitimate. I could be wrong, but there's a couple of thoughts I have. Number one is they can make the caller ID say anything they want. Number one. Number two, I think you would have received a notice in writing, not just by phone. Number three, there's plenty of interest rate reduction scams out there. They typically claim to represent a debt reduction company, or it may be a variation of that where they're pretending to be Discover. Again, I could be wrong, but I wouldn't give them any personal information. I wouldn't talk to anybody who contacts you. I would call Discover and ask them, the service rep, what this is all about, and use that phone number on the back of your card. Don't do anything else from anybody that initiates contact with you, and let us know how it turns out, Deborah. Thanks for your call today. God bless you. Well, folks, so grateful that you were along with us today on the program. On behalf of my team, Pat Montague, Devin Patrick, and Robert Sutherland, I want to say it's a joy to serve you each day on this program as we apply the wisdom from God's Word to your financial decisions and choices. Don't forget, God owns it all. We're stewards, so money should be a tool to accomplish God's purposes. Hey, again, as we head toward year end, if you'd consider a gift to the ministry, we'd certainly be grateful. Just head to our website, moneywise.org, see our progress toward our year-end goal, and click the button that says Give Now at the top of the page. God bless you. Enjoy the rest of your day. Come back and join us tomorrow. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.